Today's episode of the Nick Bob Podcast is brought to you by Pella Windows and Doors. You know, Pella, they're day one, man. They're day one homies for the Nick Bob Podcast. They've been with me from day one. And, you know, not only is Pella a great company, they got great people there. I went to school with my guy Vince, just a great dude. They're the kind of people you want to do business with. And if you've pushed off a project with some windows or some doors, something like that, now is the time to turn that project into a reality. Because we all know a new set of windows, a new door can do a lot of things for you. Can change the look, the vibe, the feeling of your home. It can add value to your home. Plus, it can make your home more energy efficient. Pella checks all those boxes and then some. Pella can provide window and door solutions to any home. And again, working with the people at Pella, second to none. So hit them up online. PellaOmaha.com. That's PellaOmaha.com. And the Nick Bob Podcast is powered by Runza. Runza has an app, and you need to download that app because as a father of two little kids, anything that can increase speed and efficiency when it comes to eating, I'm all for it. And the app does that. I can order food on the app, pop into the restaurant. It's ready for me. It's hot. I'm in. I'm out. I'm now like a finalist for Dad of the Year or something like that. And it's in large part due to the Runza app. And ordering is a breeze on the app. You can customize your order. You can get all your favorites just the way you want them. Plus, you can earn points for rewards in the app. You can score free food from Runza in the app. So go download the Runza app. You can get Runza, get rewards, then get more Runza. All on the app. Runza makes it all better.
All right, on the line now, Mitch Sherman of The Athletic. We are recording this. It is a stormy Sunday afternoon, October 24th. Nebraska's Saturday bye week is in the rearview mirror now. Did you plop down, Mitch, and just watch a whole bunch of college football yesterday with no Nebraska football media duties, or how did you approach your bye?
Yeah, I picked my spots, Nick. Good to visit with you again. You know, had some responsibilities at home, and it's good that I did it on Saturday since they were outside of the house, and I wouldn't have wanted to be out in this torrential downpour. That wouldn't have worked to mow the yard. So,
no.
In between those moments, and then as the afternoon went along, for sure, I watched a lot of football. Got to my 10-year-old son's basketball game last night. So good Saturday. And, you know, it's always interesting to watch college games in the context of like what's happening in Nebraska's season. So, I mean, it's almost, even if you tried not to look at it that way, for me, at least spending every other week around the Huskers, it's like, oh, you know, look at Iowa State, you know, look at Kansas State, right. Look at Wisconsin and, you know, the trajectory of its season. So, you know, in some cases, it some off weeks it might shine a positive light on Nebraska or a negative light on Nebraska. But I did find myself, as I went through that college football Saturday, you know, thinking a lot about how this or that would compare to the Huskers.
Totally. I mean, it's always top of mind. And, you know, trajectory is a good word to kind of springboard us here into the conversation with Nebraska, because, Mitch, maybe I'm projecting too much of my own thoughts onto the entire situation and how everyone kind of feels, but it's the season has kind of felt like the Illinois game happened and everyone was not feeling good after that Illinois debacle.
And then, it did happen.
Yeah. It did happen. It was
despite
bad.
What some people may wish, it did happen.
But it does kind of feel like each week that had passed from that Illinois game, even though there were losses in the midst of that, Michigan State on the road, Oklahoma, Michigan, it kind of felt like, at least to me, there had been some improvement and some progress being made. Where in my mind, I was kind of like, well, listen, they just lost to three top 10 teams. The Northwestern blowout kind of helped solidify the progress that I had felt like I had been seeing. And then all of a sudden, this Minnesota game happens, and it feels like we're right back to where we started, how everyone felt after the Illinois game, where I think everyone, it feels like that maybe some of the progress that they thought they had seen was erased or nullified, or it makes them question whether or not there was progress. I know it's a long-winded thing I just threw at you there, but take me into your mind and give me a snapshot with how you've kind of processed this season so far.
I think in a similar way, Illinois, you know, Nebraska set a low bar there.
Yeah.
So the task to improve from that week zero game was not as difficult as it would have been if it had been a more desirable outcome for the Huskers. You know, if they go out and play like they should, win that game by two or three scores, then, you know, I think it's more difficult to go week one, week two, week three and see progress all the way. But that would be a much better, a much better road to have to travel. When you start as low as Nebraska did on the progress meter, it becomes more manageable to show that progress. And they played better against Fordham, better against Buffalo, better yet against Oklahoma, to the point where in those third and fourth games, I think you started to see some signs of a good team. And then, you know, same thing as Nebraska went to Michigan State. And then when it came home, obviously they were clicking on all cylinders against Northwestern. The Michigan game, it was disappointing, but a lot of reasons to be encouraged with the way that Nebraska competed in that game. And then Minnesota was like, all right, several steps back.
Yeah.
And, you know, you can't have progress. You're not going to have progress every week. You're not going to get better every week from week zero through the 12th or 13th week of the year, but you don't want to see a team, especially one that's 3-4 going into that game, take a notable step back in the middle of October. And that's what happened. So it puts them just in a really tough spot going into these last four games.
How do you, I think we've all been kind of living in this world where we're trying to make sense of the reality of that you can make progress in a loss. I don't want to use that M word, the moral victory card, even though that's kind of what that is. But there's a reality that you can make progress even in a loss. But with also the reality that this is freaking year four and you got to start winning games. There's kind of been an interesting divide amongst conversations with Nebraska fans where some people don't want to hear it, don't want to hear about close and almost and they're getting better because they're not winning. And then there's some people that want to get into kind of the minutiae of the details of that conversation. How have you sorted that out in your head?
Well, one thing I take into consideration is what the roster looks like and, you know, where this projects for the future, because I think, you know, in much the same way, if this was year one and Nebraska had three single digit losses, one score losses to top 10 teams. And you can, you know, I think we can debate, you see Oklahoma yesterday,
right?
And we can debate and go, well, how good is Oklahoma?
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, Michigan and Michigan State, I think at times, despite being undefeated, they're all undefeated, but despite being undefeated, you know, there are times where I think it's easy to question whether that's, you know, really a dominant team. And I think the season will prove out and they're not going to be 12-0. I think they're both going to lose to Ohio State. You know, one of them is going to lose next week when those two teams play, but hey, this is 2021. You know, you're not comparing a 2021 Michigan to 2007 Michigan or 2008, whatever. This is the season that it is, and you have to go by the results that you've seen. And so I kind of stay away from the, well, it's not a vintage, classic undefeated Michigan team. I'm okay with seeing some positives from a 3-point loss to an undefeated Michigan team. But I also look at it like, it's the condition that the roster is in and the condition that I project the Nebraska roster to be in. Because if you're losing close games, the benefit the understood benefit from that is, okay, now just take another small step and you can potentially turn those close losses into close wins. And, you know, I don't know, Nick, if everything is status quo and, you know, there's not big changes afoot with this coaching staff 5 weeks from now, and they bring this team back, you know, just the way that rosters move now because of the transfer portal and because of who Nebraska is set to lose, especially on defense in the senior class and in the junior class, that, you know, guys who were in their fifth year, You know, I think that the argument loses a little bit of steam about the close losses when you really stop and look at what kind of condition the roster might be in next year. And part of it has to do with the you know, the lack of energy that Nebraska has right now in recruiting for 2022. That could change. You know, Nebraska may hit the transfer portal like Michigan State did after this season, like Michigan State did a year ago, and you know, and find their Kenneth Walker. But that's a tough, you know, we've already seen like how a huge influx or a big influx of transfers, and relying on those guys can be detrimental to this offense. And if you have to rely on that next year to build that roster up, just to get back to the point where you were this year, then right. I think that's kind of an ominous sign. And I take the, you know, the close losses with a little bit more, you know, they're a little bit tougher to swallow, I think, because of the way that next year could potentially look.
The Nick Bob Podcast is brought to you by Pella Windows and Doors, and I want to talk to you guys about energy efficiency. And if you go into Pella's website right now, you look at it, and how about this? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 different types of windows or doors by Pella won the Energy Star 2020 Most Energy Efficient Award. That's big time stuff right there. And they achieved that in a couple of waves. They got insulated glass, which slows the heat transfer, keeping your home at a more comfortable temperature. They got types of low E glass, which is a glass coating that has been optimized for your climate. They got triple pane glass, which you can upgrade to for increased insulating airspace. And within all of that, one of the keys is proper installation, which is key for window and doors to perform at their best. And you know the Pella experts are excellent at that. Bottom line, energy efficiency matters in making your home more comfortable, and Pella windows and doors are at the top of the line when it comes to energy efficiency. Check them out online, PellaOmaha.com. That's PellaOmaha.com.
You know, that's a good point, because that's something that I've been wrestling in my mind with as well, of kind of just the sobering and frustrating reality that You peak to next year and you could lose Martinez, you could lose a lot on defense, and you feel like mm-hmm. both sides of the ball kind of take a step back. And then you go, well, where is everything at then? You know, because it, like you said, I mean, you can make those close losses, but eventually you got to start winning games. And I don't know if the roster, if guys leave that we think could leave, it sets up to take a big step next year. But I don't know. I mean, each year, unforeseen things happen with teams, as you pointed out, with Michigan State. So it's a weird feeling of like, yeah, you got to keep it together, because you got to keep the continuity, because it'll come. And then you kind of peak and go, well, actually next year it could be kind of a, I don't want to call it a rebuilding year, but it kind of could be.
I think that's going to be an emerging storyline as we get into November. And, you know, even if Nebraska is still playing for something, if it's still playing for bowl eligibility well into the month of November, there's going to be more and more eyes that turn toward the recruiting class, for one. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, it's not great right now for Nebraska. And Scott Frost is recently on record as, you know, going into more detail about the plan to take fewer freshmen with this class of newcomers. And, you know, he's got to spin it the way that he's going to spin it and say that we're going to go with more transfers because we feel like we're really close. And, well, I mean, they're really close this year to winning games. There's no doubt about that. But are they really close next year to having the roster that they need to have to be a winning team in the Big Ten? I don't know. I don't necessarily think the answer is a resounding yes, because of some of the guys that you mentioned, like Martinez, you know, like Damian Daniels on the defensive side, like Austin Allen, Cam Taylor Britt obviously has mm-hmm. a decision to make. And I think we have a sense of where that's going to go. You know, Omar Manning, these are all guys in their fifth year as juniors. There are more who are impact players on this team. And I don't see a lot of them. Maybe I'll be surprised. And, you know, if you'd have told me that all the guys were going to come back on defense who did this year a year ago right now, I would have been surprised at that. So maybe I'll be surprised again, and they'll retain a ton of those guys as sixth year seniors again. But remember that they all count as toward the 85 man limit where they don't this year because of COVID. So there's just a lot of complexities. There's yes. more complexities yep. in putting a roster together for a coaching staff right now than you know, really have existed in a long time in college football.
So Mitch, let's zoom way out for a second, and I'm going to ask you just a pretty point blank question.
is Scott Frost coaching for his job in these last four games?
I don't. That's hard to answer.
Yeah.
I don't necessarily believe that the answer is yes. But then if you ask me what I think is going to happen if this team goes 3-9, you know, I can't say that I have a lot of confidence that Trev Alberts is going to make the decision to bring it back.
Right.
But he might, you know, Trev may have decided when he took over in July that he was looking at a 2-year plan and he was going to have a 2-year evaluation, basically no matter what happened. And if that's the case, then Frost is absolutely not coaching for his job over these next four games. But if Alberts went into it with something different in his mind, you know, we do know in a difference with Trev than all of his predecessors going back the last two decades is that he wants to remove from the equation what happened before he got here.
Yes.
And that's different than Steve Peterson or, you know, Tom Osborne in 07 or Sean Eichhorst or Bill Moose. You know, the past mattered to those guys. And, you know, I don't think you can completely take it out, but, you know, Trev has said that he's not worried about what happened for the 3 years before he arrived and that he wants to evaluate this thing for what it is with him in charge, with his, you know, his system, his style of leadership running the department. And it's different than Bill Moose's for sure. So with that in mind, can you make a full evaluation entirely based on 6 months or 5 months? And, you know, he may not feel that the answer is yes, no matter what happens on the field.
Right.
And I just don't know because he hasn't said, I don't think he will answer that question before, you know, we find out, you know, what happens. And it may be a moot point if Nebraska goes out and plays really well over
totally.
These next four games, there may not be a decision to make.
See, and that's what's so weird about it is like, is there a world in which Nebraska doesn't win another game? Absolutely. Is there a world in which, and you people might roll their eyes at this, is there a world in which they go 3-1 and beat everybody but Ohio State? I don't see why not necessarily. I mean, there's probably no evidence that shows that they could do that, but at the same time, as much as people hate to hear this, they are close to winning a lot of these games. Mm-hmm. And so it's weird because you pointed it out. If you listen to what Trev has said, he is kind of treating this like year one. But I also think, like, man, if you go 3-9 in year four with four straight losing seasons, your program's momentum is basically gone. And when you lose all momentum, that's a horrible place to be in. So I don't know. You try to read between the lines of what Trev has said when he's kind of discussed Frost in the program. But there's also just a harsh reality of, like, if they are 3-9, man, is that a hard situation to try to spin in a lot of ways. And this comes from someone that I like Frost. And I think if you listen to me and my pod, like I want it to work with Frost really bad. And I'm pulling for the dude really bad.
I think just about everybody around here wants it to work. I mean, really? I mean, yeah. Media, you know, there are, you know, certain aspects of professionalism, you know, where you don't get up and root for a player or a team or a coach. I mean, you root for a player.
Sure.
It's a great story, whatever. But at the same time, I mean, we're all tired of the revolving door. It would be great to have a program to follow. Sometimes I think, you know, and I don't want to take this down the road of like the media's perspective, but sometimes like this is based more on like Twitter interactions. I think some fans fail to realize that, like, hey, the people who cover the team around here, you know, we live here too. You know, we experience this like all of you do too. And I'm around it like, you know, almost every day. It gets tiresome to have the same discussions year after year and season after season, game after game. It would be great to have some continuity and some success and, you know, a prospering team to cover. You know, I made the comment after the Iowa State game yesterday, when you see Iowa State just execute flawlessly in the second half and beat a top 10 team. And I understand Iowa State was favored to win that game against unbeaten Oklahoma State, but still it's a big win and the fans get to celebrate and run on the field and you know, they're playing the party music. They're playing Sweet Caroline at,
Right.
you know, at Jack Trice Stadium. After it's like, wow, that'd be really cool to see that at Memorial Stadium. And I'm not, and I don't have a like a emotional stake in it, you know, officially. I guess unofficially I do. It's just, you just, how do you not
right.
when you're around
you're saying,
this thing,
though. Right.
In the sense that I am. And, you know, some responses like, you know, shut up, Mitch, you know, quit rubbing salt in the wound. It's like, that's not what I'm doing here. You know, I'm saying, like, it would be cool to be able to see that at Memorial Stadium. And I don't know where this question started and my answer veered way off
I didn't
track,
even really but, ask you a question. This was my
yeah,
fault.
It's,
that is,
it's, yeah.
Right.
It's tough. It's
it
tough,
is.
To see, you know, week after week, kind of go the way that they have at Nebraska, you know, and this year's been a struggle in that sense.
I don't know. This is probably like ramming this thought in that doesn't need to get rammed in. But in all that we're talking about, and you just think about all these data points and these opportunities to earn the trust and the patience of the fan base, or, you know, that spark. Remember how Frost has talked about, we need a spark. We got to, you know, he's talked a lot about that, of like, we need a good thing to happen. And then boom, I get that that last year's bowl game was a really, really layered, nuanced decision with a lot into it. Martinez might not even have been able to play because of his health. It was at the end of a very difficult COVID season with all this stuff. I get all that, but man, I look at situations like they're in right now, and I look back on that decision to not go into a bowl game, and I just thought it was I didn't like it at the time. I don't like it even more now, because how bad do you wish you had a bowl game? I mean, who's to say you don't go play in a bowl game and play really well, and it's your Foster Farms Bowl of 2015, and it propels you into the season or whatever. Like, this program needs any good positive vibes it can get, and they had an opportunity to play a game and they chose not to. And I get that, you know, the past is the past, but that's a decision that still doesn't sit with me very well.
Yeah, I was okay with it in the moment. I was, and maybe it was because I was tired myself of
right?
the grind of the season, you know, of the Zoom calls and everything that was so unique about, and unique is a nice word, a way to phrase it, about last season. I was, you know, I think I empathized with the players who didn't want to play, and there was definitely a group, you know, I think it was more on the offensive side. Otherwise the vote wouldn't have gone the way that it did, who didn't want to play another game. And what they didn't want, it wasn't necessarily that they didn't want another 60 minutes of football. It was that they didn't want another, you know, a couple of weeks. And it actually may not have even been that much. That Rutgers game was on December 18th. And, you know, with as low tier of a bowl game as Nebraska was looking at, it may have been like a turnaround of a week or right around a week before they played again. So you wouldn't have had any of the kind of bowl experience. You'd probably been flying into some, you know, second rate site on the day before the game or the day of the game. So I understood the reasoning and I didn't have an issue with it. I also understand what you're saying about needing a spark. And the thing that I dislike about it, about that moment in that snapshot in the trajectory of this program, is that it was put to a team vote. I don't, and I know Frost is a player's coach, as people describe it, but I think that's a coach's and an administrative decision.
Agreed.
And I don't think, you know, this is probably impossible to prove. I do not think if Trev Alberts was in charge of the athletic department a year ago, that would have happened. I think Nebraska would have played in the bowl game.
Right. Right. Totally agree. The Nick Bob Podcast is powered by Runza. You know, life is about great combinations. Jay-Z and Beyonce, me and Dana Altman, Dre and Snoop, Adrian Martinez and Austin Allen. Great combinations make life better. And the legendary combination of chili and cinnamon rolls is back at Runza. Runza's homemade chili with real ingredients combined with the sweet deliciousness of cinnamon rolls. It just doesn't get any better than that combination right there. As a lifelong Nebraskan, I've grown up having chili and cinnamon rolls. So it's a way of life for me, man. And Runza's chili and cinnamon rolls really symbolize the fall football season. And as that weather starts to get a little chilly, you know it's time to go get some chili and cinnamon rolls from Runza. Nothing better than on a cool fall day having a nice warm cup of chili from Runza. This legendary combination is only available for a limited time, so you know what you need to do. You need to get out to Runza today and get your homemade chili and cinnamon rolls game right. Runza makes it all better. I want to talk about Adrian Martinez because it's weird because he's Nebraska's best player. He's their most important player. He's the main reason Nebraska has a chance to win a lot of these games that they're playing. But he's also consistently not coming through in big moments to win these games. I really like Adrian Martinez. I think he's super talented, but it's a fascinating guy to kind of analyze in that regard. How do you make sense of Adrian Martinez when you think about how talented he is, how good he is, how important he is to this team, and then what we've seen in the fourth quarters of some of these big games?
I mean, I should be asking you, can you teach clutch? Like, I mean, is that something you can teach? I mean, from the guy who never missed a free throw, like, how do you teach that? It's not just all about practice. It's hard to practice being clutch is what I'm saying, because you can't simulate that moment inside the Hawks Championship Center. So that's what it comes down to with Martinez, because he's a phenomenal talent. He's a transcendent kind of player. Just with his skill and, the kind of leader that he is, the kind of person that he is, it's all just like at the top. And then you get him in these moments when games are on the line. And, you know, in the past, it's been more with Adrian before this season. It's been more like he wasn't quite doing the things to put Nebraska over the top. There were some examples from his freshman year that gave you a lot of hope, because it looked like he was moving toward that. I mean, even the Iowa game, his freshman year, where he drove Nebraska down and they scored and they got the 2-point conversion. And then, you know, it was in the hands of the defense and Iowa kicked a field goal to win. So that's not Adrian's fault at all. You look at that and you say, yeah, this guy's kind of got that it factor. This year, it's going the opposite way. It's not only is Martinez in these moments that matter, not only is he not making the plays that Nebraska needs from its fourth year starting quarterback and leader, you know, he's making the plays that they can't have.
Right.
The fumble against Michigan, the interception in overtime against Michigan State, taking the safety against Minnesota on the fourth drive.
Yep.
With an opportunity to take the lead in the second half. Those are, you know, those are the opposite of clutch. And I don't know how you teach somebody not to make those kind of plays.
Yeah, I don't. I mean, since you kind of flipped it on me there, I was trying to. I think, like, I'd be curious, because I think all this comes back to confidence in these mm-hmm. moments. And the only way you acquire the confidence is having been in these moments and had success. And there's mm-hmm. no other way around it. Like you said, you can't do it. And I'm talking in a game, not in a practice, not in a simulated, you know, environment when you're doing 7-on-7 or anything like that. I'd be curious to examine his entire athletic career. I'm talking like youth football, youth basketball, high school football. Did he win? What was he like in big games? What happened in the fourth quarter of an eighth grade football game? What happened when it was a tie game when he was playing freshman basketball and he got the ball with a minute left? Like, could he... Because I know for me, like, that's where you can't wait. Like, in some ways, I couldn't wait for a big moment, because I'm like, okay, this is great. I get to be the hero. Like, I've done this mm-hmm. before. I get to do it again. And it's great. There's nothing better than coming through in a big spot. So I don't know. I wonder, because it's clearly, and not all this, not all the 5-17 in record in one score games is all on Martinez, but there clearly is something systemic with Nebraska and Martinez as a whole over the past, you know, 4 years here of not coming through in big moments. And a lot of it for the collective and the individual comes back to confidence and consistently not coming through.
I think we should acquire some film from his middle school football games.
Give it to me.
Kidding. Talk about like the overboard on the analysis. Like, let's go look at him as a fourth grade basketball player. I get what you're saying. And I think I see that with kids. You know, my kids are 10 and 15 and play sports. And I definitely see, you know, some of those kids who have that it And they're the guy. There are some guys when it's the last out of the last inning and you got two runners on base and you're down run one. I don't care if you're 10 years old or you're 38, you know, or if you're Tom Brady and you're 58. There are some people that you want to be at bat in that situation, no matter how old they are and how experienced they are. And there are some people who you don't.
Yep.
And you know who those guys and girls are from a young age.
Yep.
So I do think that
it's stupid what we're saying, but it's real at the same time. You know?
Right. Right. And it's not fair to put it all on Adrian.
Not at all.
Because it isn't all him. Those moments are not all him. Like in specifically the, let's look at the Michigan State, the overtime pick that he threw that, you know, basically put a nail in that game. First of all, they're not in that situation. If not right. for the terrible punt. You need a receiver who steps up in that moment too. And Samari Toure is the intended target. And maybe he doesn't catch that ball, but maybe the best thing that he could do is become a defender and, prevent the interception. And then you live to see another day and you can definitely still score. Even if it's a field goal on that overtime drive. And you put your defense out on the field and remember how they played that whole second half. So that little play right there, you know, Adrian's going to take all the blame. He threw the pick, but it's not all on him. There's 11 guys out there and they've all got a job to do. And we give the quarterback too much credit and too much blame in these spots. And I think that's a little bit of what we're doing. What I'm doing
absolutely.
With
Me
Adrian
too.
Here in this discussion.
Me too. What do you think Martinez, what do you think happens next year with him? Do you think he comes back? Does he try to dip his toe in the NFL waters? Does he maybe even think about dipping his toe in the transfer portal? What's your gut tell you on what happens with him?
I mean, you could put the CFL in the equation too.
True.
I mean, really,
yeah.
Like, if you're, he's kind of well suited for that game.
He is.
For the wider field or the wider hashes and running quarterback. And he's old enough that it's, and remember, Adrian graduated, it'll be a year in May. So he would be in school for a third semester as a graduate if he were to come back next fall, not to mention the two summers. Maybe it would have a little bit also to do with the decisions of some of the other guys in his class, mm-hmm. like an Austin Allen or a Damian Daniels or a Cam Taylor Britt. And I feel like those three guys all have opportunities to play in the NFL, where Adrian doesn't have as much of a chance to make it in the NFL. Could he be a backup quarterback? I mean, there are far less talented guys in the NFL who are. So maybe it just doesn't something about it. It just doesn't seem like it's all that likely. I don't see him getting drafted. But he has some intangibles for sure. I think that could help a team. All that said, I guess I put it into the equation and mix it up. And don't forget about name, image, and likeness yep. as a factor in this too, which has never been a factor in a year of evaluating these kinds of things. Even a year ago, when you looked at like Cam Taylor Britt, for instance, and his decision to come back this season, you could say, oh, this guy's going to make some money on NIL if he comes back for his fourth year. But that legislation didn't even go into effect, or those rules didn't even go into effect until July 1st. So you were 6 months away from that when we even had the discussion. This year, you can have that discussion. You can say, Martinez, maybe he's repping, Pepsi next mm-hmm. season or something like that. And maybe he's making like, six figures as a college quarterback coming back. Maybe he's making that right now. I don't know what his deal is with the deodorant company. He'd have an opportunity to maybe make more money as a quarterback in Nebraska than he would in doing whatever he would do if, he moves on with his life. I still don't know. I still think that there's probably a better chance than not that, he's not like a fifth year starter. It's just not real common.
I don't necessarily agree with this school of thought, but there are some people that think that it would be best for everybody if there was just a new presence at quarterback. How do you see that for next season?
Well, I mean, I think that's just, that's still to be determined over these last four games.
Right.
If they go in the tank, and it is 3-9 or 4-8, and I don't, there's not much a whole lot of difference there. I can understand the argument. I still look at Adrian and say, go show me who's going to be better than him, who's going to be more talented than him. I mean, you can probably show me somebody who you think is more clutch than him, but are they a better player? Do they run it better? Do they throw it better? Do they lead the team better? Not anybody that I see. I think, if I had this conversation 8 days ago before the Minnesota game, and in fact, I answered a question about it in my mailbag on The Athletic that came out on the Friday before that game. And my answer was something to the effect of, Scott Frost will absolutely want Adrian Martinez back as his quarterback next year. Let's just forget that is even asked. And then you see Adrian struggle against Minnesota and look, he wasn't healthy. In some ways, maybe it wasn't fair to have him playing in that game, but that's been the situation with Adrian often in his career. He's had to go out there and, you know, have this injury that's undisclosed before the game, which is probably best for his safety.
Sure.
And perform when he's not himself, when he's not at his best. And the kind of quarterback that he is, the way that he plays the game, he needs to be pretty close, you know, maybe not 100%, but he wasn't. I don't think he was anywhere close to 100% at Minnesota, or you would have seen at least a couple of plays that were designed for him to get out and run the ball. They didn't do any of that, really. A couple option plays, but, you know, those were, I think, intended for him to pitch it. He wasn't healthy. So it's not fair to him to change the narrative of the discussion about his future based on the way that he played in one game where he was hurt.
Got to take a quick break from the podcast to talk to you guys about BetUS, because sports betting season, it's in full force right now. NBA just kicked off, NFL full swing, college football full swing. You got the Major League Baseball playoffs in full swing, and BetUS is the place to be. They got loads of bonuses. They got every single bet you could imagine. Player props, future bets. They got NFL odds updated daily. College football, NBA. They even got the UFC matches, any sort of golf, online casino, anything you can imagine. BetUS has you covered. Special promo code for you guys to take advantage of. You go use my promo code NICKBAHE, NICKBAHE, all one word. You're going to receive 125% signing bonus by just using the promo code. Again, NICKBAHE, NICKBAHE. Go to betus.com, sign up for an account today, use the promo code. You can follow my lead, get on your phone, get it on your computer, and get your BetUS bet game right, just like I do. BetUS, you bet, you win, you get paid. BetUS. And that's what's so funny about all this stuff is, like, it's hard to not ride that wave of overreacting to the last game, you know? And so, because sometimes I think about how I felt heading into that Minnesota game. I really felt confident Nebraska was going to go play well, beat Minnesota, and they were going to have whatever momentum you can have, being whatever they would have be 4-4 or whatever.
4-4.
4-4. So, it's kind of like you're never as good or as bad as you think you are. There's still that same team that almost beat Michigan and blasted Northwestern. So, I don't know. I mean, it's maybe they're not as far away as I think they are, but we always kind of come back to that like we did at the start of the season. I guess what's your prediction for these final four games, Mitch? Like, when you take it all into consideration, what's your gut tell you on what happens in these final four games?
Well, before the Northwestern game, you remember Scott Frost made a comment about breaking this down for his team into 3 2-game seasons.
Yep.
Actually, it was after the Northwestern game. It was before Michigan. So it was Michigan and Minnesota as one game, and then it was Purdue and Ohio State as a game, and Iowa or Wisconsin and Iowa as a game, because there were byes between each of these, you know, mini seasons. And so Nebraska went 0-2 in the first of these 3 seasons. I think there's an opportunity there for, much like the trajectory of the entire season. It's the word of this episode, trajectory.
Yes.
not intended, but no. there's an opportunity there for, like Nebraska has done, you know, from weeks zero through seven, to get better with each one of these little seasons. And, you know, that involves winning a game in the middle one. Beating Purdue would be the most likely path to go 1-1 yep. against Purdue and Ohio State. And then you get put in a spot where you've got to beat Wisconsin and Iowa. And I think it probably seems laughable to some people. You know, if you're down on Scott Frost, if you're down on this program, if you don't think that you know it's ever going to work or it's going to work this season, you're going to look at going to Wisconsin and Iowa and then having Iowa at home on Black Friday and saying, yeah, they got no chance to go 2-0 in that mini season. You know, Scott Frost has obviously not beaten either of those teams. Could it happen this year? Could this be the year? Could that be the redeeming stretch to erase from the collective mindset of Nebraska fans what happened against Illinois and Minnesota? I mean, if you're going to lose to Illinois and Minnesota and your repayment for that is to beat Wisconsin and Iowa to end the season, hey, Nebraska fans are taking that, especially since it's at the end, and it would get you to 6-6 with a win against Purdue. Do I think that's going to happen? No. Is it out of the realm of possibility? No, because neither one of those teams, Iowa is not the second-ranked team in the country, as the second-best team in the country, as its ranking said before it played Purdue. Neither one of those teams is untouchable. Wisconsin doesn't throw the ball. No. I mean, and Nebraska has a pretty decent run defense. I think Nebraska's defensive front seven can stack up to what Wisconsin's got with its third and fourth running backs. They looked good yesterday against Purdue running the ball, but that's Purdue. And I don't think that's Purdue's strength necessarily, is stopping the run, though it did it well against Iowa the week before. Iowa has a bad offense. So there you go. There's a discussion about Iowa.
Right.
You win, you somehow pull out a win in Madison, come home. It can happen. It's not, I mean, if it can't happen, then what are you even doing going out to practice on Monday? It can happen for this team. I'm not predicting it, but if I am predicting it, I'm saying they're going to end up with four or five wins. But could they win six? Sure.
Yeah. It's amazing. The spectrum of like how this whole thing could unfold is about as wide as it can get. And that's what makes it really, really interesting to track here what these last four games could end up being. Mitch Sherman of The Athletic. Make sure you subscribe to The Athletic. Mitch does a great job, as does everybody at The Athletic. It's just it's well worth the money, everybody. Mitch, you know I appreciate you, man. Thank you so much.
Always good to talk to you. Thanks, Nick.
A Huda Media Production.